Welcome to The Results Are In from Quest Diagnostics. Conversations with diagnostics industry leaders who enable optimized care pathways for patients.
Welcome to The Results Are In by Quest Diagnostics. I'm your host, Jen Jenkins, a senior manager on the Clinical Solutions Marketing team at Quest. Today, we'll be exploring why it's so essential to screen for hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV. We'll discuss topics such as the CDC recommendations for screening, why the guidelines exist, what's new and different about what Quest offers in this space, and so much more. Here to speak on this important topic today is Dr. Megan Sterolis, Senior Science Director of Infectious Disease at Quest Diagnostics. Dr. Sterolis, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to be here with you today. To start, I'd love if you could tell us a little bit about your background and role as a Senior Science Director in Infectious Disease at Quest.
Absolutely. I'm a board-certified laboratory director specializing in infectious disease diagnostics. I've been with Quest for 14 years now, where I started out overseeing the clinical molecular laboratory in our Chantilly, Virginia location. While I still support the lab in Chantilly, I also support our regional laboratories who perform this type of testing. I do R&D activities, and I participate in strategic planning and innovation with our business partners.
That is so interesting. And it sounds like you're very busy.
Very busy.
I would like to start our discussion specifically today by diving a bit into the CDC recommendations for screening HBV, HCV, and HIV.
Yeah, so it's currently recommended that all adults be screened for all three of these viruses at least once during their lifetime as part of their regular wellness visit. Because these viruses establish chronic infections and in some cases present with either mild or no symptoms, patients may actually be unaware they're infected. Patients with higher risk profiles, such as intravenous drug users, should be screened more often. Another important patient population for screening are our pregnant patients, who should be screened as part of prenatal care during each pregnancy. And this is regardless of risk factors, because if the patient were to be infected, there are medical interventions to protect the baby. For all three of these chronic viruses, tests for diagnosis are based on algorithms, where there are screening tests as well as required confirmatory assays. In these cases, it's best to have test codes that are built to follow the guidelines-supported algorithms. In the case of hepatitis B virus, which does have an effective vaccine, there are markers that can differentiate active infection versus immunity, and we have bundled these together in an algorithm called a triple screen. For our HIV diagnostic test code, we utilize an algorithm that includes fourth-generation tests, which are effective at detecting and differentiating HIV 1 and 2, and detects acute HIV infection using a nucleic acid amplification test when needed. And then for our HCV diagnosis, our algorithm starts with an antibody screen and reflexes to a nucleic acid amplification test for confirmation and will also provide a quantitative viral load if positive.
Now, I know these are three different viruses, but can you tell us about co-infection rates and how these conditions may overlap for certain patients?
So HIV, HCV, and HBV share common modes of spread, such as contact with infected blood from sharing needles for patients who use intravenous drugs or from sexual spread. So we are quite concerned about co-infections. We want to catch these because infection with HIV and either Hep C or Hep B has a higher risk of liver disease progression and other severe clinical manifestations. In at least one study, patients with triple infections had a 12-fold higher risk of end-stage liver disease. And when looking at people infected with HIV in the United States, about 25% are co-infected with Hep C and 10% are co-infected with hepatitis B. But if you look at the intravenous drug user patient population, this percentage of co-infection is much higher. For example, the rate of hepatitis C co-infection in people with HIV who use injection drugs is reported to be between 62 to 80%. So that is why it's so important to refer to screening guidelines, which state that we should be screening for all three of these viral infections.
That makes a lot of sense. Those numbers definitely aren't lying when it comes to the need for that screening. I do want to shift a little bit. I know that these viruses are not new as far as infectious diseases go, but I know we are constantly innovating at Quest all the time to find new and better ways to serve our patients and providers. So for the HBV triple screen panel you mentioned, can you give me just some background on when or why a physician would want to order that panel?
Triple screening is recommended by CDC for universal initial screening for all adults, including pregnant patients and those who are at increased risk of acquiring hepatitis B. There are several serologic markers associated with hepatitis B to determine active infection versus past infection, immunity levels. So choosing the right assay and interpreting results can be quite complicated. Because of this, using a HBV triple screen panel is a great option to ensure that all the required markers are tested and to help with interpretation. So the triple panel includes hepatitis B surface antigen, which is abbreviated HBsAg, antibody to hepatitis B surface antigen, which is anti-HBs, and total antibody, both IgG and IgM, to the hepatitis B core antigen, which is anti-HBc.
And what would be the utility of ordering the panel rather than those components separately?
Yeah, for initial diagnosis, using a panel approach ensures that all the needed tests to make a diagnosis and manage the patient are ordered. So this allows for identification of people with active Hep B infections to get those patients linked to care. The results also allow for identification of patients with resolved infections, patients that would benefit from vaccinations, and patients who are vaccinated and immune. After the initial screening, future testing using the individual components can be utilized based on what's appropriate for that patient. So, for example, only testing hepatitis B surface antigen and total antibody to the hepatitis B core antigen if the patient's unvaccinated.
Okay. You did mention that interpretation is a little complicated sometimes. Can you talk a little bit more about what the results of the panel might mean?
Yes, it is a bit complicated to interpret. So a positive result for hepatitis B surface antigen indicates the presence of the virus in the blood, meaning the patient is currently infected with hepatitis B, although other tests would be used to indicate if this was an active or a chronic infection. Actively infected patients should be linked to appropriate care and are able to transmit the virus to others. A positive hepatitis B surface antibody indicates immunity to Hep B, either from prior infection or vaccination. A level greater than or equal to 10 MIU per mil will indicate if the patient is actually immune. A positive result for antibody to the HBV core antigen indicates a current or past infection, but does not necessarily indicate immunity. This marker is interpreted in the context of hepatitis B surface antigen and hepatitis B surface antibody to determine active versus past infection. It's also important to note that the Hep B vaccine does not induce antibodies to the HBV core antigen. And I said a lot just then, but what's really interesting is that the amount of information you get about the patient's HBV status when you look at all of these results together. For example, the patient can be classified as susceptible, meaning they have no prior immunity from infection or vaccination. The patient can be diagnosed as either acutely or chronically infected. You can also differentiate if the patient is immune from vaccination or from a past infection. The titer provided with the hepatitis B surface antibody will also indicate if immunity has waned, since that 10 MIU per mil or higher is correlated with immunity. And if all of this is very complicated and hard to understand, there is a very helpful interpretive chart. If you visit the Quest Diagnostics test directory and search for HBV triple screen panel, there is a link that says test summary, and there is an interpretive chart that helps you to make sense of all these different markers.
I've also heard that our report for the HBV triple screen panel is pretty comprehensive in explaining results as well, in a way that's a little bit easier to understand.
Correct. Our reports really aim to make the interpretation very user-friendly.
That's great. Shifting gears a little bit over to HIV, in particular screening, have there been any new developments either in the industry or in Quest with HIV screening?
Yes, there are two HIV screening updates I'd like to highlight. The first is for patients who are considering or are taking PrEP or pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. These are patients who are HIV negative but have a high risk of acquiring HIV and are taking prophylactics to prevent infection. The HIV screening guidelines from CDC for patients considering or who are on PrEP are quite different than what is used for routine screening and diagnosis. There are different algorithms for PrEP-naive patients versus patients on PrEP, both of which differ from the standard HIV screening guidelines. For patients who are PrEP-naive, the diagnostic algorithm looks similar to the HIV fourth-generation screening protocol, but differs in that the decision to use an HIV RNA NAT test is not automatic. It is based on if the patient has experienced an exposure and is showing signs and symptoms of early infection. The second algorithm for patients taking PrEP is really quite different than the standard algorithm. The recommendation for these patients is to test at specific time intervals with an HIV antigen antibody screen and an HIV NAT right up front. This is because it's very important to catch breakthrough cases early. If a patient on PrEP does experience a breakthrough infection, the physician will reevaluate how that patient is being managed. The other update I wanted to discuss was a 2023 technical update from CDC. The original fourth-generation diagnostic guideline recommended confirmation with an HIV 1 NAT if the antibody confirmation was indeterminate or negative. At that time, there were no FDA-approved HIV 2 NAT tests available. However, there are options on the market now, and CDC updated the algorithm to include the option for an HIV 1 and 2 NAT confirmation. This is a very important update because even though HIV 2 is rare in the US, we now have a guideline-driven recommendation to include HIV 2 NAT in the algorithm. There are treatment differences, so if we do have an HIV 2 case, it is important to identify that.
So if providers are ordering this test for their patients now, they will get that HIV 2 result in the reporting. Is that correct?
Yes. Quest Diagnostics has updated our standard HIV testing algorithm to include HIV 2 NAT result in the reporting. One thing I want to highlight is that very few cases require the NAT step, and most cases are finalized in the first or second step of the algorithm. But for those rare cases that do require HIV NAT confirmation, clinicians will now see results for both HIV 1 and HIV 2. And while we're on the subject of reports, another really exciting change we've made that I want to highlight is that we now include an overall interpretation on our HIV reports. We've had feedback from healthcare providers that we serve that interpretation of the HIV diagnostic algorithm is challenging, and relying on report messages to interpret results does not align with their busy schedules. So now there is a final interpretation of either HIV 1 or 2 positive or negative, which considers all the results of that patient, and it's now prominently displayed at the top of the report.
That is very cool. I am a big proponent of anything that makes it easier for providers and patients to understand what's going on with results. And I guess on the topic of results, for patients who have an existing HIV diagnosis and are going through ongoing monitoring of their disease, can you explain what a blip in the HIV viral load might mean for somebody?
Blips are a phenomenon we see with HIV, with the understanding that HIV is a lifelong infection. HIV establishes infection in certain cells of the body, and the goal of antiretroviral treatment is to get the patient to an undetectable viral load. However, it's important to point out that undetectable does not mean the virus is no longer in the body. It's still there, but viral replication has been suppressed. Even when a patient's viral load is well controlled, there are things that can cause what is called a blip, or a low level of detectable virus in a patient whose viral load has been well controlled. This could be due to temporary issues going on with the patient, such as a recent illness, or it could be due to testing-related anomalies. Blips are typically not clinically actionable if they are under 200 copies per mil and short-lived. However, if viral loads increase and are prolonged over time, this could indicate antiviral resistance, and testing for resistance may be warranted.
Thank you very much for explaining that. I think we're getting ready to wrap up this episode, but do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
The key takeaway is that universal screening for HBV, HCV, and HIV are so important to linking patients to care who may not even be aware they are living with an infection that could spread to others and cause serious medical conditions later on. The goal is to intervene with these patients before major issues occur, such as liver disease with Hep B and Hep C, or immune impairment with HIV, and we also want to prevent the virus from being spread to others. We also want to encourage more frequent screening for patients at risk for acquiring these viral infections. Another takeaway is that we take healthcare provider feedback seriously, and we've heard that they want easier ordering and result interpretation. Building codes like our HBV triple screen and overhauling our HIV result interpretation are just a few examples of the ways we want to make it easier for our healthcare providers to practice medicine. And as always, we're open to additional feedback on how to improve our offerings.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Sterolis.
Thank you so much.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. I'd like to again extend a huge thank you to Dr. Megan Sterolis for sharing her insights on the importance of screening for hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV. We learned all about CDC recommendations for screening, why the guidelines exist, what's new and different about options that Quest offers, and more. If you enjoyed this conversation and want to stay informed about the latest advancements in diagnostic testing, make sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review. You won't want to miss our upcoming episodes where we dive into more groundbreaking research and real-world stories that impact patient care. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jen Jenkins, and we'll see you next time on The Results Are In by Quest Diagnostics.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Labs.